Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. I'm Brett King.
And I'm Jason Henricks. Every week since 2013, we explore the personalities, startups, innovators, and industry players driving disruption in financial services.
From incumbents to unicorns, and from cutting-edge technology to the people using it to help create a more innovative, inclusive, and healthy financial future. I'm JP Nichols, and this is Breaking Banks.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King, and joining me in the hosting chair today is my good pal, Brian Claggett.
Just call me Bill Murray today because it's Groundhog Day.
It's Groundhog Day. Oh my goodness. It feels like that. I have, though, been I've been watching on Apple TV this new series with Ewan McGregor, The Long Way Up. Have you guys seen it?
No, but I love him.
You got to check it out. It's just like I've been obsessed by it, like binged it yesterday. They drive from the bottom of they go from the bottom tip of South America all the way up to Los Angeles on these electric Harley Davidsons. It's a pretty wild trip. Anyway, not an ad for Apple TV, but great show if you get to watch it. So today we're going to be talking about how do you defend against challenger banks, and how if you're a small community bank in the United States in particular, but it could count for elsewhere around the world, or a credit union, and you don't have the big budgets that the big digital players have, how do you respond to the COVID crisis, and how do you, incorporate that into your own essentially challenger bank strategy? Our first guest joining us today is Casey Christopher. She's the Chief Empowerment Officer at Quantic Bank. Casey's role is focusing on corporate culture, employee connections, and engagement. We also have my pal Kesh Talwa, the Chief Revenue Officer / CEO of Movin Enterprise. His experience in strategic business development and product strategy is unmatched. He spent time at many of the big majors in the space. Kesh, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Brett. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. And Ram McDaniel, the VP of Strategic Solutions at Q2. He has a career in leading complex cross-functional programs and initiatives in the technology space, with an emphasis on business development, sales, market strategy, competitive positioning, entrepreneurship, and new product strategy. All right.
That's just so much. Thanks, Brett.
Yeah, man, seriously.
Great job. We are recording on Friday the 13th, just so everyone knows.
We are. Yeah.
Man, did you have to mention that?
And it's been a long week.
Yeah. Friday the 13th in 2020. Who can imagine what this day is going to be like?
Yes, let's not tempt fate. But Brian, you are now managing partner at Jamestown Associates. You're a regular contributor and co-host of Breaking Banks. So thanks for joining me in the hosting chair today.
Pleasure to be here. Hey, I was just looking at some statistics that came out from McKinsey a while ago that are pretty interesting, that are a good way to kind of tee up things that are happening today. Did you guys know that 21% of the digital banking usage right today is from new users? That's 21%.
That actually doesn't surprise me. My 96-year-old grandmother uses our online banking now because of women being forced to.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in the entertainment space, 24% of the current users are considered new to this year, which is interesting.
No, there's been a big boom in computer gaming sales this year as well. I mean, obviously, it's not just the PS5 launch that's happening right now, but there's been a huge uptick in people playing video games at home. It's like, I guess when you're shut in, when you're in lockdown or you're working from home, the temptation to put on some video games is pretty strong there. So But Brian, you know, on that point, it's interesting when we talk about the COVID effect of digital. And Casey, to your point with your grandmother, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence that people's behavior have changed. But you know, I'm also also refer you guys to the data that Ron Shevlin released over the last few months regarding digital account opening in 2019. So 66% of all new bank accounts opened in 2019 were done digitally. And so if you are thinking that, oh, well, it's only now that digital has sort of come in, it's clear that's not necessarily the case, that those behaviors were developing well before that. Unfortunately, and this sort of leads us to the community banking, you know, credit union discussion in the US and smaller banks, you know, around the world, is when you look at this shift, it's tended to go two ways. You know, we've got the challenger banks who are really optimized in terms of onboarding customers, can generally optimize, onboard a customer in, you know, a minute, 30 seconds, something like that. And then the big boys, you know, the big players, the JP Morgan Chases and the, you know, the those others. I'll exclude HSBC, because they still don't have digital account opening for non-existing customers right now. But you know, for Chase, for Wells, for B of A in the US, this has meant that during COVID, they've also captured a lot of new customer activity. So COVID is not just going to be bad from a perspective of the disease itself, but for many banks sort of in the middle of that, between the challenger banks and the big players, they're challenged with acquisition of new customers during this time because of, you know, the fact they lagged a little bit on digital. So anyone got any comments on that?
Something that we've talked about is generation connected, meaning that I think when a lot of the digital account opening and onboarding started, it was, well, what do millennials want? What do Gen Zs want? Well, why wouldn't myself as a Gen Xer or my parents as a baby boomer want the same excellent service digitally just because they're older? That never made sense to me. So we actually have found that our average online user and account opener is 58 years old. So really unique when you delve into the data. And I encourage everyone to really pull back that onion, the layers of the onion, to understand really who are your users.
I think that compares to about 48 years old on average. Is that about right? Or am I showing my own age?
No, I used to have the Brad Pitt factor. I used to call it the Brad Pitt factor. Now, he's a little bit older now, so I don't know whether they've aged. Because, you know, it used to be, if you look at credit unions, you know, their average age of their customer 20 years ago was like in the mid-30s, and now it's Brad Pitt, you know.
Yeah.
And so the theory being that while there's great service for those existing customers, they really haven't opened up or you know, provided a space where millennials or younger customers, you know, are convinced or compelled to work with them. And so, you know, I think part of that is obviously the concept of service is changing, right? Is that, you know, for a millennial, Gen Z, their concept of service when it comes to banking is much more skewed towards digital. Right. And so if you're an organization that says, well, no, but our best service is in the branch, and, you know, you can't get around that mindset shift, then, you know, obviously you're going to be a little unprepared when you know, those demographics are really changing.
Hey, Casey, could you tell us a little about your business model? It's somewhat unique. Quantica is not your typical bank.
No. Our mission is to break the system for financial empowerment. So we're reframing and re-understanding what we can do for our customers and our employees too, which is really important to us. We have three strategic anchors that we go back to all the time, and that's innovative deposits, adaptive lending, and then also maximum leverage. So we are unique because we have a different mindset, but we're also unique because we're a CDFI. So we're a community development financial institution. So we have a unique lending strategy. We cater to low income and gig economy workers. And basically, we want to lend money where other banks don't lend money. And that's worked out really great for us in the past. And really, we're excited to be able to come to work with low-income and gig economy workers during this COVID situation.
You have something called True Digital. Can you explain that concept as well?
Sure. So True Digital is not only a mindset, but it's also something Patrick and I are putting together to allow other banks to understand what we're doing here at Quantic and us helping them understand that fintech isn't scary and that it's very embraceable and that the jargon isn't scary and that we can help you look a little bit more like us and that we're open to that there's enough to go around. There's abundance in this theory and that we're here to help. And all high tides raise all boats, right?
Yeah, on that point, I mean, how do you think banks generally in the US have perceived challenges coming into the market, and how, if at all, how do you think that's changed over the last few years?
Well, I think that's changed immensely. I think that in the past, it was kind of like a tap on the head, like, okay, you different banks, we'll see how you measure up to us. But I think in recent years, when challenger banks have showed their success and the affinity that customers have for them, we've really showed up in a big way.
Yeah. Ram, Kish, do either of you guys have a comment on this? Ram?
I have a lot to say about this, but I don't want to take over the show. No, I think that in many ways, the challenger banks and the fintechs that are kind of acting as challenger, as neobanks, are aggregating communities of a different kind, right? And so when we look at sort of the role of the community financial institutions, sort of aggregate people and communities of interest of all kinds, you know, they pull together these people, except the difference is they're adopting e-commerce best practices that should have been adopted, you know, 10 years ago in the financial services industries. And it's hard to get there. But what I think is interesting about, you know, COVID as an event compared to previous events is it didn't really shift us in a direction that wasn't known before, right? It's not like 2008 where everybody's head was in sales.
Never thought this would happen.
Yeah, and then everybody's head moved from sales to risk and sort of clamped down and stopped innovating for 10 years. You know, instead, you know, you look at the banks that were doing well now, they are largely the banks that were already adapting to this environment, right? I mean, when I talk to banks, I hear the two different stories that start the same way. And it always starts with, we weren't a remote organization before, but, right? And then here's where they diverge. But we had this huge traffic spike when everybody went home and our vendor handled it well, or they handled it poorly. We had to send everybody home and they didn't have computers, but we were planned for that because they had laptops, or it was terrible. We had people, you know, unplugging machines from the wall and taking them home. You know, you hear a whole cascade of events like that. And what it leads to is the people in the first category who handled the traffic well, who had a disaster plan, who had a pandemic plan, who already had laptops, who enabled their employees to work from home, who had already worked through the risks of being a remote organization for some period of time, even in a benign way, just by giving their employees flexibility. If their culture was already pointed to adaption and growth, regardless of whether they were already in a best practice place or not, those seem to be the banks that are acquiring customers now and benefiting from this shift. And the ones that hadn't started already, where they had been, you know, treating the digital channel, as it were, like pure cost, they're struggling right now. And I think it remains to be seen whether this is merely a strategic challenge or an existential threat to those guys.
Kesh, Moovin has standardized on this working from home, you know, practice. So how did that come about? And you know, compared with like a traditional organization, how quickly was Moovin able to adapt to the working from home regime?
Well, the interesting part is, you know, we have folks across the globe, right? So anyone either not in Philadelphia or New York was working from home anyway. So that part was easy, right? It didn't change for them. Folks in Manhattan also, you know, worked from remotely, also out of Radnor, where our operations center is, would work from home 1 or 2 days a week. So on the 15th or 16th of March, when we said no one's coming into the office, we really didn't break a sweat at all. It was just amazing the way people got along. And, you know, one of the things that we started doing was holding a weekly gathering or a get together every Monday evening at 4 o'clock for an hour. So the whole company speaks to each other. Everyone's up to speed. So you don't miss the camaraderie that was there. At the same time, you know, employees, you know, the water fountain conversation also gets into this session. So we try to make sure that we are keeping everyone involved. All the key decisions are shared with them. It's actually worked out to be a lot better because previously out of sight was out of mind. Now a lot of the key decisions and progress, sales updates, platform updates is discussed at these calls. So I think, you know, for companies that are willing to go do this, this is certainly something they should look at.
Yeah, absolutely. Casey, what's your policy on the working from home?
So most folks had laptops, and when the lockdown came in New York City, we were able to, I wouldn't say easily send home, but we had a great leader of our IT, and the IT department was really able to put together what we needed really fast. We have our branch, and one of our offices is in Astoria, Queens, which was really hard hit. So we were able to get those folks home, and then our other office in Manhattan, we were able to ship laptops to folks that weren't able to come in. You know, we had a similar experience to Cash where we were meeting on a weekly basis, sometimes daily basis. We were over communicating. You know, we know it's really important at that time, and we continue this to make sure that our employees feel safe. And part of feeling safe is feeling informed and being informed. So that's been a real goal of ours.
Let's transition over to the impact of work from home mm-hmm. on consumer banking. You know, what do we see that's happening? I mean, right now we know that, you know, a number of branches remain closed in the lobby. The drive-ins are being used. You got to make an appointment here in Virginia if you want to see your banker. But what are the long-term impacts of this going to be on the bank branch and on digital transformation? And do we think work from home is going to become more of a norm? I mean, I'm reading that it's going to be. I see what Facebook is doing and some of the other employers. Any thoughts on that? I mean,
look, I think in the tech industry, it's definitely going to become a norm. I think what's happening in other industries as it sort of bleeds over is people are now, when they're being recruited, during that recruitment phase, they're actually asking, can I work from home? And that's making, you know, that's a part of the decision matrix that they're using for selecting a potential employer.
So since COVID, Quantic has actually onboarded 129 new employees. And of those 129, they're in 25 new states. So we have completely embraced the work from home. We want the talent. We want the folks that want to work for us. We want folks that have the same mindset of breaking stuff. And if those folks are located in Kentucky, then we'd like to hire you in Kentucky. I think the COVID has, while Quantic had a very innovative mindset to begin with, it certainly accelerated our transformation and kind of was a surge to transformation. And that's to build better systems, not only for our customers, but for our employees too. So that's made a big impact on both sides. We've rolled out paid parental leave for our employees, which to piggyback on Brett's comment on what are people looking for now, not only work from home, but what else can we offer folks? And then we've really improved the digital onboarding for account opening for our customers. So we're constantly thinking about both ends of the spectrum, our customers and our employees.
Rob?
Yeah, well, I mean, you hate to say this, but as a digital banking company, it's good for our business, but I'm seeing a couple of things. First, I think it is here to stay, and I think it is going into industries where we didn't see before, like banking. I think this will potentially have the effect of focusing banks who do maintain a branch presence to make those branches really, really good and really appealing. And I don't mean like turn them all into coffee shops and hope that you can compete with Starbucks. What I mean is giving people a reason to go to the branch that is something that you can't satisfy in the digital channel. You know, additionally, I think this is going to accelerate. I'm not sure this is good. The sort of I don't know, the trend of having employees who can work from anywhere that are focused in a small number of high cost, very attractive geographies, which, you know, I think unfortunately is kind of a drag on some of the communities that the community banking industry exists to serve. You know, I think that's an unfortunate reality. The other thing is from an infrastructure perspective, I don't have any data to back this up, but I'm hearing this from CTOs, which is that a lot of organizations that had really dug in their heels about hosting on-prem and owning their own infrastructure are suddenly very friendly to cloud infrastructure because they realize they're either not properly set up or they're not properly set up now and don't have enough capacity, and then in short order will have more capacity that they need to deal with it. So I think we're going to see an acceleration to the cloud as a result of all the working from home.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one other element here too, Brian, is these numbers, but about 30% of bank branches in the United States are unprofitable.
Yep.
And so the longer those branches remain temporarily closed, the more likely it is that those branches will become permanent victims of, yep, of COVID. That's my feeling. So when you come out the other side of this, I think we will find 2020 has been the single biggest year in the last, 2 decades where we've seen a gradual decline, but the single biggest year for declines in bank branches in, yep, the United States, at least.
Yeah, when I was a banker in the 80s and 90s, I was involved in location and site analysis, you know, where we were going to build our new branches, what was our retail distribution plan. And we often would look at where people live and work, right? And a lot of locations out there are built around that premise, right? They're built around the commute. And now if the commute is down from the first floor to the second floor or vice versa, the bank of the future increasingly is going to be right on your mobile phone. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. In 2020 already, we're anticipating $1.3 trillion will be spent on digital transformation, which is a record.
It's a nice, nice check.
Yeah, I would not want to be in the commercial real estate business right now trying to represent former properties.
I just got some data on New York. 88% of restaurants in New York didn't pay their October rent.
Yeah, it's frightening. It's
pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, now this is going to have a profound impact long term. And, you know, the sad part of it, this will not be the last pandemic. You know, it might be the last in our lifetime.
Likelihood is climate change is probably going to bring more pandemics as, you get glacial melt and primordial viruses released into the wild. It's very popular. I mean, it's very possible, rather. It's not popular. Yeah. It's very possible.
Popular with who?
Yeah, with the viruses.
Primordial.
It is. Remember, it's Friday the 13th. We're doing this.
The viruses are coming. So there is a chance that these pandemics will continue over the next 30 years in particular. Yeah. So sorry about that, Casey.
So Ron, we've got another minute before we go to break. What are you seeing on the client side? Are you seeing a desire to spend more on digital from the Q2 clients?
Without getting the details, yes. I mean, I think it's moving from wherever it was in the strategic priority stack up by 2 or 3 notches. If it was number 2, it's number 1. If it was number 3, it's number 1. If it was number 6 before, that was not an organization that was well focused. It has moved into the top 3. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that this has forced people to make choices and recalibrate their thinking in a way that they should have a long time ago.
Makes sense.
Great. Well, listen, guys, so we're going to take a quick break here. Kesh, after the break, I want to talk about the role of financial wellness and how Moovin has adapted from being a challenger to now a banking as a service platform. And we'll get into an exciting new announcement between Q2 and Moovin. That's coming up after the break. You're with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, co-hosting here with Brian Claggett. And we'll be back right after these words from our sponsors.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device. including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
And now, here's more Breaking Banks.
The Breaking Banks Europe podcast brings you European unicorns, startups, founders, regulators, and leaders all innovating in the rapidly evolving fintech scene.
Hi, I'm Matteo Rizzi.
I am Ajit Tripathi.
This is Matthias Kröner.
I'm Megan Johnson.
I am Paolo Sironi.
I'm Nina Mohanty. Join us and some of the world's most well-known hosts and influencers in fintech as we bring you insights into European fintech. Find us wherever you normally listen to your podcasts or at provoke.fm.
Welcome back from the break. I'm Brett King, your host of Breaking Banks, the number one world's fintech radio show and podcast. It is a Friday, isn't it? That's why I'm having the struggles today. But so Brian, before the break, we were getting into some of the meat of the problem in terms of adapting to this digital shift. You know, Kesh, maybe take us through the process of moving from a challenger bank modality to banking as a service during COVID. Can you talk us through milestone sort of which happened earlier, sort of near the end of Q1 in 2020? Well, early Q2, yeah.
Thanks, Brett. Movin, started off in 2010 as the first challenger bank in the world. Obviously it's Brett's brainchild. And it's formed into an enterprise business in early 2016 with TD and TD Canada, for which part of the restriction was that there was a non-compete in the United States. So we focused a lot in the rest of the globe, and we've got clients in Japan, Indonesia, New Zealand, Middle East, South America. So reasonably good coverage, but the US was always close to us. So in April of this year, we got the go-ahead to bring our solution, digitalized banks, to the U.S. market. And we, worked with Brian Claggett here to see the best fit. So what we said was, because of COVID, a lot of banks were asking us for what we could do. And we said, all right, we need to present a full service. This was, done along with Brian. And we then identified, one of our partners as Q2 with Ram on that side, and said, if we could bring a digital bank, into the space for any bank that is struggling, hasn't thought about it, or needs to get it done immediately, this would be a perfect solution for them. It doesn't contradict or step into anything they're doing today, but this opens up or gives them the footprint to get into the next step of digitization, either the separate brand, same brand. And over time, while they figure out the strategy, they can roll into this. So we believe that the offering that should be announced in the next few days, with Q2 and Ron.
Well, we're announcing it right now, right?
That's right.
It's imminent. So let me ask you before we get to that, because I know we do want to get to that, but Movin is already powering challenger banks elsewhere around the world. Can you talk about the STC or what's happening in Indonesia and elsewhere?
So, for the past 3 or 4 years, the interest in using Movin to build a digital bank has been very well received, globally, including in the U.S., but we had some restrictions to do business in the U.S. We have signed a long-term partnership agreement with STC Pay, the largest wallet provider in the Middle East region, and they're going live in December or early Jan, probably in the next 60 days. And it's a multi-country deal, and you know, they've got about over 4.5 million users that they're going to give them bank accounts and then use that same solution to give them credit cards. And then they're going to go market by market. So they've got their roadmap lined up, which I believe, you know, I can't really share, but it's a very, very smart strategy that they're following. At the same time, we've got a 5-country deal with Banco Atlantida in Central America. And it should have gone live, but because of COVID and a lot of remittances going from the US to Latin America, they had to shut their branches down and try to figure out how they could actually, you know, service their customers with the branches being shut. So the project got delayed. So now we are working in an accelerated manner to get them live by year end so they can actually get to what they were looking for about 4 months ago. You know, so everyone looks at it that the digital is the next step in it. And I think once you give them an end-to-end solution that's easy to use, doesn't, you know, and checks all the boxes from a risk or a legal compliance issues, you know, I think that a lot of banks would say, this is easy to do. I don't need to spend, you know, millions of dollars. I mean, you can look at whether it was Finn or Bo, you know, or even if other banks that shut down recently, at ING, right? They shut it down after spending 140 million euros. These would be solutions for the banks to go try, test, improve, and implement, right? So this becomes a stepping stone for them with the limited bandwidth and resources that we have. So we're pretty positive about this in the marketplace, especially with working with Q2.
I think the trick to that is, and Ram, I want you to jump in here. You know, the trick is if you partner with this sort of infrastructure plays, and we're going to talk whether that's with Q2 or Movin or someone else. You know, you get the advantage of bending space and time. You can accelerate digital transformation rather than attempting it yourself. That's really and it's cheaper as well. You know, TD as a matter of record has said that if they didn't work with Movin on MySpend, you know, the white label version of Movin in Canada, it would have cost them well north of $100 million to produce that themselves. And they've got that for a fraction of that by working with us. But Ram, you know, in respect to the marriage of a core and your capabilities, your you know, digital banking capabilities that you guys have built, and what attracted you to Movin as sort of a way to accelerate, you know, other banks that are, you know, potential clients of Q2 or existing clients and giving them the option of being their own challenger bank or at least having a challenger product in the market?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, if you think about what Q2 is, right, we're not Fiserv or Jack Henry or FIS, but we're like them in the sense that we have a portfolio of products that play in a very diverse environment, right? We're mostly known for our digital banking, kind of omni-channel banking product that works with 40-odd different cores. And then we've got lending and leasing, and we do reg tech through our acquisition of Centrix, and we have security products. And we kind of cover the gamut of the full-service bank, right? And we exist because we want to strengthen communities by strengthening their financial institutions. I think we recognized in about 2015 when we created what is now the Q2 banking as a service business, was that we, in order to help the financial institutions that serve communities, it was not enough for us to get them to parity over time in a digital transformation with the challengers and the big banks. We also had to create a niche for them to play in the fintech ecosystem. So we have an asset called CorePro. It is the first and only core processing system that is purpose-built for standalone digital lines of business. And for the last 2 or 3 years, we've primarily been using that to facilitate banks issuing accounts through fintech partners. So, for example, MVB working with Credit Karma or NBKC working with Betterment. Those things are running on CorePro as a companion outside and separate from the operational stack. But over that time, more and more banks have come to us and said, it's great you can facilitate these partnerships with fintechs, and it's great that you can help the full service bank transform, but I don't necessarily want to do those partnerships. And also, transformation, to your point, Brett, is an expensive long-term project that takes a protracted period of time. And what I want as a banker is to stand up my own Marcus or my own Chime, right? Or my own Movin, right? It was the one I used to hear a lot. And tell me how to do that. So we are, you know, thrilled that Kesh and the team selected us to be the core provider for their kind of banking as a bank in a box initiative. We think that CorePro is an ideal fit, and what, you know, I think the example of Finn is really instructive, because a bank can spend a lot of time and a lot of money, and the scope creep and the budgeting and everything else makes it really difficult to pull off that strategy well. I think between the two of us, we give them the ability to deliver their own markets or their own moving, you know, very quickly and very cost effectively. And when I say quickly, I mean in the span of, you know, a month or two relative, yeah, you know, instead of a year and a half, right? So we see the challenger bank strategy not as something that replaces the transformation of the bank, which is going to be an ongoing process really that lasts forever, but to your point, as a way to shorten the distance between here and there and acquire customers and compete with the fintechs while the full service bank under its own brand moves forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah. In fact, I want to come back to a point you're sort of making, is that also during this period, as a result of sort of this accelerated need to transform, you see a lot of banks relying on putting more middleware in the cloud to get there, don't you? Because rather than, you know, we don't hear a lot about core system replacements and those sort of things that we used to hear in the past. Now it's more about augmenting your existing core. I find that is a common theme. Would you agree?
Yeah, we don't, I mean, CorePro, we do not do conversion deals in the banking as a service business. You know what I mean? Like, we're not really set. We don't have teller line support, and we don't, you know, have all the things it takes to run an entire bank. We'll let Jack Henry and FIS and Fiserv and DCI and you know, Correlation and some of the new players, you know, compete for the conversion space. I think what we're really trying to do is be very focused on helping chartered financial institutions support partner fintechs or their own fintech initiative, and to support standalone digital lines of business. And that's, you know, really where we focus. And the reason why we've done that is because what we found is that core systems are typically, burdened is the wrong word, but highly functional, but also very rigid, because they have to be.
Restricted,
maybe. Right? Yeah. What we're trying to focus on instead are really three things: transactions, accounting, and compliance, and that's it. And so if Moovin or a fintech or a Betterment or Credit Karma wants to build their own product on top of a system, and they want to handle, you know, login and password and onboarding and you know, linking external account and, you know, householding and all the things that really don't need to be on a core, because a core is fundamentally a ledgering system, then we're in a really good position to help them.
And that's the flexibility that bankers like Casey want. She wants to focus on the experience, not on the technology and the implementation and the funding of that technology in order to make it happen. She simply wants to create, you know, relationships based on experiences that leverage data.
I thought we weren't going to pitch Casey live.
Let's ask her.
Frictionless everything. That's how I like it. No friction. Listen, number one, Kesh, congratulations on everything that's going on for you, and round two with the partnership. You know, Quantic is always interested in good people doing good work and innovative things. So this is super exciting to hear about.
Brian, you know, you were involved in pulling this deal together. What made you think Q2 and Moovin would be such a good fit?
Well, yeah, I mean, it started off in August. You know, when Kesh and I started talking after you introduced us, the first thing that impressed me was really where you guys were taking the traditional PFM model to a PFA. So PFM, as we know it, I think is pretty much dead. There have been some challenges with the budgeting aspect of it. It's overemphasized. The data is not being leveraged comprehensively. You know, what you're doing with Moovin is doing that. At the same time, knowing what Q2, I've got experience with Q2 from my Gizio days, and I was aware of the CorePro product. I know what bankers are looking for right now. You know, they are looking for that frictionless experience, just like the consumers are. So I reached out to Ram. Ram kind of told me strategically what they were thinking of doing. I knew what Kesh and you, Brett, were thinking about doing with the product. And it seemed like a great enterprise role. I think the decision for you guys to move from B2C to enterprise is brilliant. It's I think I wish you'd done it 10 years ago, although you got some remarkable experience from working with consumers directly. Not unlike what Geezeo did early on. Yeah. So I think it's a great partnership. For my 20 years of experience in the banking side, when I was actually a banker, all through that time, all I heard was how difficult it is to work with legacy cores to roll out new product. And this is a great option. The fact that any bank in America can now offer a Marcus or a Chime-like product within 30 to 40 days is pretty remarkable. And the fact that it's as affordable as it is, that's pretty exciting as too. So I'm proud to be part of it. I'm glad that it's working out as well it is. And I'm going to tell you right now, the market's ready for this. And it's a great time for companies like Nimbus and Agora Services and anyone else that's focused on cloud products. Banking is evolving, and the technology providers need to be a part of it sooner than later.
Yeah. Now, I will say that in the U.S. market, as we were getting into pushing the enterprise banking as a service model out, you know, one of the challenges we had was people were saying, but you're a bank, aren't you? Aren't you? You're competing with us here in the U.S. So no longer having the challenger bank function sort of has made that easier. But you know, that wasn't necessarily a choice. You know, we're also a victim of COVID. We had a huge chunk of financing at the start of 2020 disappear. And yeah. So that was part of the reason for this. But having said that, we'll come out at the end of the year with our biggest year in terms of revenue this year on the banking as a service enterprise platform. So for Moovin, it's been a year of ups and downs in that respect, you know, in terms of change of strategy. But it's certainly, I think it's bang on now. We're really seeing the pipeline open up significantly from that. So, let's talk about, you know, how we're rolling out this new partnership with Q2 and Moovin.
Oh, sure. The interesting part is to get it done quickly, it's to help banks create just a digital strategy. Either same or a different brand, you know, that's up to each one how they want to go do it. So it's going to be, you know, we're starting off with savings and aggregation, possibly even a checking account in a brand new digital stack for them. So that they could start in, you know, in 30 to 45 days, which we think is a comfortable time for them to go do it, do a short pilot, and, you know, then they're off to the races. The things that will really help them are some of the features that Moovin's developed and use across the globe, right? It's higher engagement. There's limited attrition on it, right? People get used to it because of the engagement. The banks can now offer more products that are relevant and of a contextual nature. When you add those things up, what is it banks want? Like less friction, more revenue, my customers stay with me, and to give them the products that they want when they want it. This gives it all to them, right? And working with CorPro and with Q2, right? We can deliver those features, functionalities, and capabilities to them that they don't need to go back and spend a lot of time and effort on. This is quick, gets them in the marketplace, get the brand awareness. And if you're a small community bank in a town, you can expand your footprint, right? You really don't need to open a branch 60 miles away. But if you have a strong brand that people believe in, right, there's no reason it can't be branded along with the same bank name, but go out another 60 miles that you were never there before. So, you know, those are some of those capabilities that I think we can bring with them with this partnership.
Great. Ram?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going out between the two of us with a limited number of choices because time is the really the critical factor here, right? I mean, this is not a build everything you want, right? This is a turnkey product. I do think that over time we're going to go where the market takes us, right? If the market proves out and there is demand, as there certainly seems to be for a turnkey, you know, bank in a box of this nature, you know, then I think we'll continue to add to it. And I think, you know, the Moovin team certainly has, I mean, they're doing a lot more of the work, right? We're given a ledger. But I think they certainly have a lot more on the truck that they can deliver than aggregation, savings, and DDA. That's I think where we're comfortable starting and what we can deliver in short order. You know, I think though that this demonstrates though that this is an ecosystem and we've all kind of embraced open banking here. I mean, there's nothing about this partnership that stops Moovin from you know, selling into the enterprise and working with the core that's already in stock at the bank. And likewise, we continue to do the work that we do with fintechs and Q2's front end and everything else. So, you know, I think, you know, as Casey points out, there's enough for everyone here. And whether it's, you know, Galileo working with SoFi and standing up the partnerships that they have, or Nimbus working to stand up digital banks, I think what's really key here is that the companies in this space, and in our case, Movement and Q2 working together, really focus on achievable execution that can be delivered fast, right? And then once we do that and we start building that and put these guys on sound footing where they can acquire customers and take some share back, then I think we'll see what kind of expanded things we can deliver together, whether that's card or small business or any number of other things.
You know, one interesting part of this is a bank doesn't have to just say, hey, I want to offer a challenger bank. A bank could say, you know what, I want to offer a product very specific to the gig economy.
Like a mobile bank account.
Yeah. And so now it can be built and you can roll that out and customize that within 35 to 45 days pretty easily. So instead of a marketing campaign, now you're presenting the market with something they can actually use and adopt.
Yeah, I think that's also true, Brian, in the case of, you know, so what we would consider to be traditionally underbanked or marginalized groups, you know, the ABA and Cities for Financial Inclusion just jointly kind of announced this Bank On initiative that had a number of standards associated with a Bank On certified account. One of those as part of the execution was it for it to have its own landing page. You know, the challenger model isn't just a challenger model. It gives a bank a way to cost effectively deliver to any specific audience, whether it's gig economy workers or traditionally underbanked people, in a way that is cost effective and efficient for them to serve.
Yeah. Great point. Casey, you have any thoughts on this? I know we've talked about Zoom and the need for speed.
Right. That is a word that keeps coming up this morning. And I want to encourage other bankers to move at a pace that maybe they're a little uncomfortable or that they haven't moved at before. At Quantic, we've been moving pretty fast with new partnerships and evaluating new vendors and partners with us. And Zoom has really accelerated that, because in the past we would meet someone and say, oh, next time you're in New York or next time I'm in San Francisco, let's meet up and talk about that. But that's not an option right now. So we're able to accelerate that relationship building immensely through Zoom. And we've worked really fast and it's been a real positive for us.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, I'm semi-retired and I've never been so busy. And it's because everybody wants to collaborate right now, which is, to me, there's never been a more exciting time to be in financial services. So, Brett, tell us a little about this Movin 5.0 that you guys are moving towards. And maybe, Kesh, you can add to that, too.
Maybe I should write a book, Bank 5.0.
Maybe there should be... There should be a book.
I actually stated in Bank 4, I said I wouldn't end up writing 5.0 because it's when we're bankless and cashless, right? And so I didn't think I'd be around for that, but who knows, right? With 5.0, if you look at the evolution of Movin, you know, we started off with Cred Score. You remember that, yep. Brian, yep. A while back. And then, we obviously went down the financial advice route in terms of not financial advice in terms of investing, but financial advice in terms of your financial well-being. Where that accelerated during COVID is we recognized that the economic effects of COVID would probably last a lot longer than the health effects of the pandemic. And so we wanted to build a set of tools that could help people recover financially from the pandemic and the economic crisis associated with it. So now, that starts with some fairly simple things like a cash flow prediction model that enables you to look out, say 3 months out and see where you're going to run out of cash for reoccurring expenses you might have. So, your car insurance or a kid's school fees or something like that. And so where we can actually predict that shortfall coming out sometime in advance. And then we can tell you, hey, you need to drive for Uber for 6 hours to get this get enough money to pay this bill that you've got coming up in a couple of weeks, or the alternative is, you know, to work with a bank partner that can provide, you know, a credit facility, for example. So this is something that we can build in. Additionally, overall, sort of, we've really improved sort of the saving scoring capability and sort of an overall financial wellness view that a customer can look at. So looking at his use of credit, whether he's got too much credit, whether the fees from the credit cards or loans that he has, you know, are problematic. So there's an opportunity for maybe some debt consolidation. And just increasing your overall savings velocity and playing off that balance between the short-term and long-term elements of saving. One of the interesting things that Movin has proven out over the last few years with our savings modality, particularly around Wishlist, is that the old budgeting method that we used to use, the envelope method, we'd call it, right, where you'd put different, you'd have different envelopes with your different, savings goals that you'd have. We translated that into sort of the digital world with building you different goals. And so you'd have different savings buckets or different savings account for each of your goals. What we found is that that wasn't effective for a lot of people because it actually damaged long-term savings viability. And so when you have small buckets, small goals, you know, in dollar terms compared with, say, retirement, you know, or putting your kids through a good education. When you have those smaller goals, going on a vacation or buying your iPhone or whatever, you know, those smaller goals tend to get filled up first. And so what ends up happening during the year is you fill up all your smaller buckets and you neglect your longer term savings objectives. So what we did with Movin is create an environment where it shows that balance between the long-term savings objectives and the shorter term savings objectives. And one of the key things we wanted to focus on out of the gate was having some emergency cash. You've all heard the stat, and there's some controversy over it, but you know, the $400 stat that, you know, half of Americans couldn't or more couldn't afford a $400 economic shock to the system. But most people don't have enough saved for emergency. So catering for sort of an emergency cash fund, looking at longer term savings and looking at your shorter term savings goals holistically, and just generally being able to create a faster velocity of savings over time, helping you understand how you can save more generally over time is sort of that objective. But there's a lot of AI built, or not AI, but data science built into that model. Some simple machine learning, in terms of the models that, you know, particularly for the predictive cash flow and things like that, that really get us to that point where we can make some pretty bang on. You know, we can know now with 90% accuracy after 3 months. If we've got 2 or 3 years worth of your financial data, we can know with that percentage of accuracy 3 months out whether or not you're going to have a shortfall in terms of your cash flow, which, whether that's for a gig economy worker or a small business worker that have been, you know, really affected by COVID, that really helps you now have a plan or strategy as to how you're going to cope with that in a very different way from walking to a grocery store, swiping your card and finding it's declined because you forgot about a bill that has just come in.
This reminds me of a conference call that you, me, Sean Ward, Pete Glyman, and Alex. Had. Yeah. And the topic we came out with was engagement banking, right? You know, we're at a point now where we've got the technology and the wherewithal to be there in time of need and to offer relevant messaging, very contextual messaging, so that we're able to solve a problem for a customer or a credit union member in a predictive way, almost before the problem arises. And that to me is a very exciting time. So we have about 2 minutes left. Ram, I know I saw an ad from Q2 the other day. It said digital banking is banking. Do you want to add a little color to that?
I mean, in 2 minutes left, I'm worried I might overcolor it, but I will say this is that one of the words that I'm most tired of in our business is the word fintech itself, because if it's fin, it's fintech. Yeah. Right? There's tech embedded in everything, right? So I mean, I wish we could find something that was better than that, because, you know, digital banking is banking. If you cannot fully express yourself digitally, then chances are you're facing an existential crisis right about now.
Well, Ramen Cash, when can we expect to see this partnership rolling out?
When did you say, Cash? Late January?
By end of January, we feel comfortable with getting the first client up.
So if you want your own Challenger Bank app or Challenger Bank product in the market and you want to do it quickly within weeks, then Q2 and Moving can help you with it. So appreciate it. Casey, how do we stay in touch with you and find out what's happening at Quantic Bank?
Absolutely. You can follow me on LinkedIn, Casey Christopher, C-A-S-E-Y, and Christopher with a C. And then also check us out at quanticbank.com.
And Ram, where can we check out yourself on social media and Q2?
My Twitter feed is terrible. It pertains mostly to basketball and petty beef, interpersonal, but I am McRom on Twitter.
Okay. And Q2?
Q2.com.
Q2.com.
Letter Q, number 2.com. That's it.
Very good. And Cash? Moving.com. And where else can we follow you?
LinkedIn, Twitter, Cash Talwar on both. K-E-S-H-T-A-L-W-A-R.
Very good. And of course, for Brian, it's at Claggett and myself at Brett King. So thank you for joining us again on Breaking Banks today. It's very exciting for me to be a part of this new Q2 and Moving partnership. Brian, thank you for your role in that. I don't often use this platform of the show to promote these things, but for me, this is important. It's our contribution to helping people recover from the financial crisis that's accompanied the COVID pandemic, but it's also part of really getting the US to be competitive once again from a digital perspective, seeing what's happening with China fintechs and the rest of the world. We need to accelerate digital transformation here for sure. So thanks for joining us, Brian. Thanks for being the co-host again.
That's it for this week. If you like the show, make sure to give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform, or share it with a friend, or share it on social media.
You can listen to all of our more than 300 episodes, plus all of the other shows from Provoke.fm Media, and learn more about being a guest, a partner, or a sponsor, all at Provoke.fm.
We'll see you again next week with more Breaking Banks.